Thursday. Bob and I are standing in Charlie's empty classroom, on time, hands in our coat pockets, waiting for Miss Gavin. Every bone in my body doesn't want to be here. However long this meeting lasts, I'll probably be late for work and can already foresee chips to the day and never catching it. I feel as if I'm coming down with a miserable cold and I forgot to down a shot of Dayquil before we rushed out the door. And I really don't want to hear whatever it is Miss Gavin is going to tell us. I don't trust this Miss Gavin. Who is she, anyway? Maybe she's a terrible teacher. I remember from open house night that she's young, in her 20s, inexperienced. Maybe she's overwhelmed with her job and has been scheduling a meeting like this with the parents of every kid in her class. Maybe she has a thing against kids who challenge her. God knows, Charlie can be challenging. Maybe she doesn't like boys. I had a teacher like that once. Mrs. Knight only called on the girls, only gave the girls smiley faces on their papers, and was always sending one of the boys out into the hall or to the principal's office, never one of the girls. Maybe this Miss Gavin is the problem. I look around the room for evidence to support my well-reasoned suspicion. Instead of the individual desks with attached chairs that I remember from my elementary school days, this room has four low, round tables with five chairs arranged around each, like little dining tables. Ideal for socializing, I'd say, not for learning. But my nice long list of things that the inept and unqualified Miss Gavin is doing wrong ends with that single lame observation. Art projects line the walls. At the front of the room, printed out photos of kids are taped onto two giant poster boards titled Stellar Spellers and Math Olympic Champions. Charlie's picture is on neither. Five vibrantly colored, stuffed, kid-sized armchairs sit in a corner labeled The Book Nook, next to a shelving unit packed with books. At the back of the room, there are two tables, one with a hamster in a cage and the other with a fish in a tank. Everything looks organized, cheery, and fun. I'd say Miss Gavin loves her job, and she's good at it. I really don't want to be here. I'm just about to ask Bob if he wants to make a break for it when she appears. Thanks for coming. Please, have a seat. Bob and I sit in the kiddie chairs, inches from the floor. Miss Gavin sits high in her grown-up teacher's chair behind her desk. We are munchkins, and she is the great and powerful Wizard of Oz. So Charlie's report card must be concerning to you both. Can I start by asking if you were surprised by his grades? Shocked, says Bob. Well, they're about the same as last year, I say. Wait, whose side am I on? Yeah, but last year was about the adjustment, says Bob. Miss Gavin nods, but not because she's agreeing with him. Have you noticed if he has a hard time completing the homework assignments? Asks Miss Gavin. Abby starts the process with him in the afternoon, and Bob and I continue with him often past his bedtime. It's supposed to take only 20 to 30 minutes. He struggles, agonizes, stalls, complains, cries, and hates. Worse than broccoli, hates. We threaten, bribe, implore, explain, and sometimes just do it for him. Yup, I'd call it a hard time. In his defense, I know I didn't have homework at his age. I don't think kids, with the exception of a few precocious girls, are ready for the responsibility of homework at the age of 7. I think the schools are putting too much academic pressure on our little kids. That said, we're talking one page of greater than or less than or spelling words like man, can, ran. It's not rocket science. He does, I say. It's brutal, says Bob. What are you seeing here, I dare to ask. He's struggling. He can't complete any of the class assignments on time. He interrupts me and the other children, and he daydreams a lot. I catch him staring out the window at least 6 times before lunch every day. Where is his seat? I ask. There. She points to the chair closest to her desk, which also happens to be right by the window. Well, who wouldn't get lost in thought when you've got a view? And maybe he's sitting next to someone who's distracting him, a troublemaker, a pretty girl. Maybe I gave Miss Gavin too much credit. Can you try moving his seat to the other side of the room? I ask, sure I've solved the whole problem. That's where he started the year. I need him right in front of me if I want any chance of holding his attention. She waits to see if I have other bright ideas. I have none. He has a hard time following directions that have more than two steps, like if I tell the class to go to their cubbies, get their math folders, get a ruler from the back table and bring it back to their desks, Charlie will go to his cubby and bring back his snack, or he'll bring back nothing and just roam the room. Are you seeing anything like this at home?
No, says Bob.
What? That's Charlie, I say. He looks at me like he can't imagine what I could be talking about. Is he paying attention? I wonder what Bob would get on his report card. Charlie, go get dressed and put on shoes. Charlie, put on your pajamas, put your clothes in the hamper, and brush your teeth. We might as well be speaking Greek. Yeah, but he just doesn't want to do those things. It's not that he can't. All kids try to get out of doing what they're told, says Bob. I sneeze and excuse myself. My congested sinuses killing me. He also doesn't participate well in activities that require taking turns. The other kids tend to shy away from playing games with him because he won't follow the rules. He's impulsive. Now my heart is breaking. Is he the only one doing these kinds of things? Bob asks, convinced that he's not. Yes. Bob glances around at the 18 empty little chairs and sighs into his hands. So what are you saying? I ask. I'm saying Charlie is unable to focus on all aspects of the school day. What does that mean? Asks Bob. It means that Charlie is unable to focus on all aspects of the school day. Because? Challenges Bob. I can't say. Miss Gavin stares at us and says nothing. I get it. I envision the policy memos stamped and signed by the school lawyers. No one is saying the words I think we're all now thinking. Miss Gavin, for legal reasons. Bob and I, because we're talking about our little Charlie. My mother would be great at this conversation. Her next words would be about the nice weather we're having or Miss Gavin's pretty pink shirt. But I can't stand the unspoken tension. Do you think he might have ADD or something? I'm not a physician. I can't say that. But you think it. I can't say. Then what the hell can you say? Asks Bob. I put my hand on Bob's arm. This is going nowhere. Bob is gritting his teeth and is probably seconds away from walking out. I'm seconds away from shaking her and screaming. This is my boy. Tell me what you think is wrong with him. But my business school training kicks in and saves us all. Reframe the problem. What can we do? I ask. Look, Charlie's a sweet boy, and he's actually very smart, but he's falling way behind. And the distance between him and the other kids will get worse if we do nothing. But nothing can happen fast enough here unless the parents initiate an evaluation. You have to ask for it in writing. Ask for what, exactly? Asks Bob. I half listen while Miss Gavin describes the red tape line mountain climb to an individualized education program. Special education. I remember when Charlie was born, checking him for all 10 fingers and toes, studying his delicate pink lips and the conch shell curviness of his ears. He's perfect, I thought, amazed and grateful for his perfection. Now my perfect boy might have attention deficit disorder. The two thoughts refuse to hold hands. Kids are going to label him. His teachers are going to label him. What did Miss Gavin call him? Impulsive. The kids are going to throw names that are sharper and uglier than that at him, and they're going to aim for his head. I want him to see his pediatrician before we start doing anything here, says Bob. I think that's a good idea, says Miss Gavin. Doctors give kids with ADD Ritalin. That's an amphetamine, isn't it? We're going to drug our 7-year-old son so he doesn't fall behind in school. The thought flushes the blood out of my brain as if my circulation won't support the idea, and my head and fingers go numb. Miss Gavin keeps talking, but she sounds muffled and far away. I don't want this problem or its solution. I want to hate Miss Gavin for telling us any of this. But I see the sincerity in her eyes, and I can't hate her. I know it's not her fault. And I can't hate Charlie. It's not his fault either. But I feel hate, and it's growing massive inside my chest and needs a place to go, or I'll hate and blame myself. I look around the room for something, the innocent faces of the kids on the Stellar Spellers board, the painted hearts and moons and rainbows, the hamster running on its wheel.
The hate stays trapped inside my chest, crushing my lungs. I have to get out of here. Bob thanks Miss Gavin for informing us and promises that we'll get Charlie whatever help he needs. I stand and shake her hand. I think I even smile at her like I've enjoyed our conversation. How ridiculous. Then I notice her feet. In the hallway after Miss Gavin has shut the door to her room, Bob hugs me and then asks me if I'm okay. I hate her shoes, I say. Baffled by my answer, Bob decides not to ask any more questions of me at this point, and we walk to the gym in silence. Before the bell is just about over and the kids are lining up to go to their classrooms, after saying hello and goodbye to Lucy, Bob and I find Charlie in line. "Hey, bud, give me 5, says Bob. Charlie slaps his hand. "Bye, honey. See you tonight. Do what Miss Gavin says today, okay?" I ask. "Okay, Mom." "Love you," I say and hug him hard. The kids ahead of Charlie begin to walk, following one another in a line, inching out of the gym like a single caterpillar. The line breaks at Charlie, who doesn't move. "Okay, bud, get going," says Bob. "Don't fall behind, my perfect boy."